This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
From the Quicken Loan Studios in Houston, Texas. Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today. Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back inside the Quicken Loan Studios at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. That's right, we are in hour number two. We always love to connect with all of our guests. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports, and our amazing podcast page. If you've not been there, you have got to check it out. We have so many cool hosts right here at our network, podcastarena.com, podcastarena.com. Well, right now, we're going to go around the horn. We're shifting gears. We got to talk some baseball. And Fran Zimnick, he is an author. He's a baseball historian. Fran has written many books, including The Evolution of the Closer in Baseball, Going, Going, Gone, The Art of the Trade in Major League Baseball, Crooked, A History of Cheating in Sports. And let's not forget Phillies, Where Have You Gone? And that's where our conversation is going to take us right now. So we are ready for the 2017 Philadelphia Phillies preview with my dear friend. I have known Fran for so many years. It's good to have you back in the saddle. Fran Zimnick, how are you, my dear?
When I'm talking to you, E, I'm fine. It's always nice to be on with my favorite radio hostess who has a radio voice and a movie star face.
Oh, I love you, Fran. You're the best. So let's talk about it. Let's get to Philly. They won. I know it was hard for you. They won only 71 games last year, and they lost 91, so they finished fourth in the NL East. How much better are they going to be in 2017, and what are the biggest questions facing this franchise right here, right now?
Well, keep in mind, last year they were 71-91, but that was an eight-win improvement over the previous season.
Okay.
So while it was a frustrating year, there were lots of positive signs, and they did win eight more games. So, you know, I think that was a real positive. They didn't finish in last place. As you said, they finished in fourth. And I think that, well, of course, now every team is in first place. You know, no one's lost a game yet.
Right.
Hope springs eternal. But I really think it's going to be a better year for the Phillies, and I think they're actually going to flirt with 500. I'm not sure if they can get to 81 wins, but they've made some significant improvements in the offseason.
He's an author, baseball historian, Philadelphia Phillies. That's what we're talking about right now with Fran Zimnick at SB Nation Radio. But I have to step back and I think, gosh, 90 losses. I know they improved by eight games, Fran. In 2016, I mean, it still was tough. So when they took a look at the offseason and what they were going to do, what was the focus to reverse this type of finish? I know what you're saying. Yeah, they were trending in the right direction, an eight-game improvement, but it's certainly there were so many challenges that they had to overcome. What was the focus?
I think there were two focuses, offense and relief pitching, as in setup men. In offense, last year, their corner outfielders were atrocious. I mean, they couldn't hit their weight, they didn't hit for power, and they couldn't field. Other than that, they were great. So in the offseason, they picked up Howie Kendrick, who's a very professional hitter from the Dodgers organization, and another good outfielder by the name of Michael Saunders, and they are going to be plugged into right and left field. And Odubel Herrera, who is a very good young player who they just signed to a long-term deal, will be in center. So the outfield looks much, much stronger than it did last year. And there's also another young guy named Aaron Althair who's had a lot of injury problems, but if he's healthy, he could push one of the corner outfielders for their position as well. So I think that the offense was abysmal last year, and it just improved a lot with those two additions. As far as the infield goes, it's pretty set. Ryan Howard is the last of the 2008 championship team to go. So he's been replaced by Tommy Joseph, a young guy who came up last year and had a very good season. Cesar Hernandez is solid at second. He hits maybe 290. There's a guy named Freddie Galvis who is okay at shortstop, and we have a very good young third baseman in Michael Franco who hits for average and for a lot of power. So I think that that offensively the team's going to be a lot better. As far as the bullpen goes, they were atrocious from the time last year where you would go from the starter to the closer. But they added a couple of veteran pitchers, Pat Nashek and Joaquin Benoit, during the offseason. And I think they're going to really help get to the closer, who right now is Genmar Gomez, who saved, I think, 37 games last year. But he sort of fell apart the last month of the season. I think he was really tired, but he looks really good in the spring so far. So I'm feeling good about it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think they could really flirt with 500 this year.
Author, baseball historian Fran Zimnick is back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. I want to step back just a moment. You know, when we first started talking about the outfield, and you are a historian. You know, when I think of those Phillies, the dynasties, weren't they energized by strong outfield play? That really was their strength when you think back to those earlier years?
They've always had good position players. They always scored a lot of runs. Mm-hmm. I mean, back, you know, going back 20 years, Mike Schmidt, the best third baseman in the history of the game, he played for the team for, I think, 19 seasons. And mm-hmm. you had outfielders like Greg Luzinski and Gary Maddox and people like that. So yeah, they've always had good offensive players. And, one of the really great things about this team is, you know, you can see improvement last year. There's going to be improvement this year. But what's down on the farm, we went from having one of the worst farm departments, you know, farm systems in baseball, to having one of the best by trading people like Cole Hamels and Carlos Ruiz and John Papelbon, people like that. There are so many great young players in AAA right now that they're just knocking on the door. One of the best prospects in baseball is a shortstop named J.P. Crawford, who is going to get a shot to play in AAA this year. And he may very well press Freddie Galvez for the shortstop position before the season's over. Same with an outfielder named Nick Williams, who had kind of a tough year last year, but he seems really determined to make up for it this year. He could be knocking on the major league door as well. So there's a lot of hope down in the minor leagues, and some great young pitchers in the minor leagues too, like a guy named Zach Eflin, who pitched well for the Phillies in a few games last year. Mm-hmm. So it just seems like there's a lot of hope for the future. They have some good young players on the team. And again, the prospects down in the farm system are like amazing.
Oh, what does opening day look like for the Phillies? And Fran, are you going to be there?
Opening day is in Cincinnati, so I won't be there. The home opener is coming up. I have some business travel, so unfortunately I won't be able. When they're opening the season at home, uh-huh. I will be down in Florida conducting business, so unfortunately I won't be there.
You know, I think about the Philadelphia fans, and they truly have. They've been through a lot over the past couple of seasons, and it sounds like, you know, they're going through this big rebuild right now. How much more do you think, timeline-wise, that they're going to have to endure? How much more work do they have on this rebuilding project in Philly?
Well, it's almost like, which sport are we talking about? Because
right.
It's not just the Phillies. It's the Flyers, who probably aren't going to make the playoffs. The Eagles had a losing uh-huh. record. The Sixers have been abysmal, but this mm-hmm. year they've already won 18 more games than they won last year. There's so much fun to watch. It's amazing. But so all four franchises have really been awful. But as far as the Phillies go, like I said, I think 500 is a really good shot for this year. And if some of these young guys come in next year, maybe they sign a free agent or two, they could actually, next year, contend for a playoff spot. I think that they're definitely in the right place.
Okay, tell us about the front office, the general manager, I mean, kind of the leadership with this organization and the vision that they have and kind of, you know, the moves that they are making. Are you in agreement with that? Do you like what you see?
Oh yeah, well Matt Klentak has come in as the general manager, replacing Ruben Amaro Jr. Mm-hmm. I feel like I should say also Ruben Amaro Sr. is in really serious condition right now. And when I was a kid, he was a shortstop with the Phillies, and uh-huh. I followed his son's career. All Ruben Amaro Jr. is now a coach with the Red Sox, but he was the general manager in Philadelphia for years and was under a lot of scrutiny and a lot of criticism for deals he either made or didn't make. But at the end of the day, he got five great players in exchange for Cole Hamels in a deal with Texas, and he really helped load the farm system up before he was let go. Matt Klentak has come in. He's one of the young GMs in the Theo Epstein mold. Mm-hmm. And he's really come in. He has a good knowledge of the game. He's made some very, very positive moves. He really believes in loading the team with pitching because his idea is, you don't sign free agent pitchers. You grow pitchers in your farm system and bring them up. And then when they're in the league a few years and you have to decide if you want to keep them or not, you're dealing from a position of strength, but you're not spending gazillions of dollars for a guy. Mm-hmm. And then you have the decision to make, well, if you want to sign someone long-term, you can. But what he will do is go out and get offensive players. So I like his idea of building a winner. And again, it's exciting because, as I said, we're undefeated right now, and I think it's going to be a good year.
That's right. 2016, there were 71-91, fourth in the NL East. Always a true pleasure to catch up with our friend of the show, Fran Zimnick, author and baseball historian. Check him out online. Always good. Thank you, Fran.
My pleasure. Always good to talk to you.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way in hour number two after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back to hour number two as we are inside the Quicken Loan Studios at SB Nation Radio. And that's right, you have dialed in the Big E Sports Show. So the countdown is on. We are all excited. We cannot wait for the men's Final Four this weekend in Phoenix. And our guest, he is there covering all the action for our network for SB Nation Radio. That is Lee Klein. He is the host of That Bracket Show, very popular on our network. He is also the former five-star camp CEO. He knows exactly what it takes for these guys to get to the collegiate level. Good to have back my friend Lee Klein. How are you, Lee?
Doing great here in Phoenix. It's buzzing already, and I'm just so excited. What I think will be a great Final Four. Two, if you will, Goliath teams in North Carolina and Gonzaga. Yes, I say Gonzaga, with, you know, multiple McDonald Americans and a terrific, terrific season. A couple of others that no one really expected to be here. I mean, Oregon had a great season last year.
Yeah,
I think. Especially us non-West Coast people, we become doubters on how good West Coast hoop is. And Oregon is back with a couple of really mentally tough kids in Dorsey and Brooks. And then, you know, who gave South Carolina an invite? But they're here, and they just refuse to lose. They're defensive-minded, gritty bunch, and the whole country's really falling in love with Frank Martin and Sendarius Thornwell. And It's really been a fun story throughout the tournament.
Well, I know it's been a very fun week for you. And, yes, we're going to break down all four of these teams here in just a moment. But how many Final Fours have you been to, Lee? I know we had a special time last year when you were here in Houston. And what is this past week, the festivities, what has it been like there in Phoenix?
I want to say it's got to be 20 years now. It's Indianapolis in mid-90s was my first, so... Mm-hmm. I don't know the exact time. You know, when you get to be to my age, I guess everything just kind of blends in here.
You're not that old.
So it's mid-90s, Indianapolis. And now, you know, there's a couple things going on as far as the Final Four themes. The first thing is, this is the basketball industry party. Everyone comes. It's our convention. If you're in basketball, you're a high school coach or college coach or junior college coach, you're here at the Final Four because that's really where our industry, the only place where it gets together. And so it's a lot of fun to see familiar faces, and some of them were, you know, had great seasons and some of them not so much, but still great. The camaraderie of it is without peer as far as in what we do. And then, you know, the other aspect is when you see the kids and they're shooting on the baskets and they're doing that. I mean, that's, you see how vibrant the game of basketball is, and you get to feel that firsthand when you see the kids, the little kids out there, and they're shooting at the clinics that are held here. And it's a real celebration of the sport and the celebration of the game. And we've got great representation, if you will, on the court with, you know, really good players and really good teams. There are a couple, if you will, skeletons or shadows of major college basketball that also exist, that it'll be interesting to see how much they come up, whether it be the Carolina academic issue, which is now spanning almost 5 years with these allegations of fake classes. And then, you know, Oregon 3 years ago had a real serious, three kids thrown off the team for what was like sexual assault.
Yep.
And so you have, you know, all of it is here. The good, the bad, and if you will, the at some point ugly. It's all here, and that's what we got here in Phoenix.
the host of That Bracket Show at our network, SB Nation Radio, Saturday mornings from 11 to 1 Central Time. He is back, Lee Klein, with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Always love hooping it up. So talk to us about the first team let's shine the spotlight on is North Carolina. They advanced to the Final Four. And the word, the descriptor that comes to my mind is this is all about redemption. Can they do it? Because they want a championship, especially after how it went down last year.
Well, it's, you know how hard it is to go back-to-back Final Fours
right.
in today's
Good
era?
Good point. Mm-hmm.
I mean, what an incredible job by Roy Williams. And we'll have Matt Daugherty on the show on Saturday talk a little bit about Coach Williams, who I really think is underappreciated when we talk about the great coaches in our game. His name rarely comes up, but yet he keeps doing it year after year. So I give a lot of credit to him and what they did as a program. Now, they've got a lot of ways to win basketball games, but unlike other Carolina teams in the past, there's no lottery pick here. There's no Jordan. There's no Vince Carter. There's no, you know, Rasheed Wallace. There's no one of that top 10 in the draft player. There's some really good players. Jackson's a really good player. Berry's a really good college player. Like, mm-hmm. they're really good, but they're not of that that whole level of elite superstar. But what makes them really good is their ability to push the pace. They score, you know, usually put 12 seconds on the clock, and they try to score within the first part. So they're very good at pushing the pace. They've got great ability to they have multiple guards. Berry and Jackson are probably their best scorers. And in their inside play, what they're able to do on the glass with Meeks and Hicks and just – a lot of different ways to win the game with the guards by pushing the pace and on the glass. So there's not many teams left that can do that have that three ways to win the game.
They like to advance it up the court. They like that transition as you're talking about. But take us back to the game against Kentucky. And how about that no-name sophomore hitting that game-winning shot on Sunday? He came up big and proved a lot of people wrong.
Luke May and another great story. My former partner, Howard Garfinkel, got a chance to see him. Really liked Luke May as a prospect, which was interesting. And mm-hmm. now he would have been so happy to see him hit the shot. But that just goes to show you that often it's not, you know, really good teams take away your best players. Somebody else has to step up. And the really good teams have guys ready and able to do that. And that's what Luke May. The ball fell in his hands, and he knew exactly what to do. His play throughout the tournament has been his best play yet, and it's really exciting for him as a sophomore. And I think, again, has more of an opportunity to play a big role. And he's led what could be two more games.
And from what I understand, too, Lee, I mean, here was this May kid. He was a walk-on and then earned a scholarship. Can you kind of tell us the backstory?
Well, he's good enough to be a scholarship player
okay.
at a lot of different places. So it's not as if it was, it gets a little blown up through the media. It wasn't as if here's a guy that couldn't play at all that, you know, just found his way there. No. He was a recruited player. He was a good player. He wanted to go to North Carolina. So he's, you know, maybe he wasn't recruited or by North Carolina on that level. But chose Carolina and now has been able to really play productive minutes. But he's come far, but he hasn't come so far where he was just found on the cornfield.
Hey, we are getting you ready for the men's Final Four. Been going one-on-one with Lee Klein, the host of That Bracket Show right here at our network, SB Nation Radio. You got to check them out tomorrow morning, 11 to 1. The conversation is going to continue after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. The countdown, it is on for the men's Final Four. So excited. And we are going one-on-one with Lee Klein, the host of That Bracket Show at our network at SB Nation Radio. Right now, we're going to rejoin our conversation with Lee Klein. Talk to me about Kentucky. We got into this a little bit in hour number one. What do you think of the job that John Calipari has done?
I think he's. I think they've done a great job. I mean, nobody talks about Coach K getting knocked out by South Carolina.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah,
Cal is a beacon for this, and he takes it on, and it's part. You know, he's outspoken in that regard, but you know, as for what they've been able to accomplish as a program, they probably would like to have another national title there in Lexington. But I think he's done a great job. I think that they didn't have the talent that they've had in the past, quite frankly, when you stack it up and you look at the team like Davis and Gilchrist that won it. You know, this team was a good team, but only got to this Elite Eight level based on a few role players developing in Willis and Hawkins, because usually you'd have four or five bona fide McDonald's All-Americans that step in and really contribute for Kentucky. In this case, you had three stars, you know, Monk, Fox, and Bam. Those guys were stars, but that's really all they had from that talent level. And then everyone else really, you know, developed. Briscoe's been, he's a guy that makes everyone else better, but on his own talent alone, doesn't, let's say, gel off the shot chart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, out of the box score, but so I think they were a player too short. When we talk about these elite teams, when we talk about Carolina or Gonzaga, you look at the makeups of those teams, I think they were a player short, and they had the hardest road. I mean, they had to beat UCLA, you know, they had to beat Wichita, they had to beat UCLA and North Carolina. They had a real tough road. So I think, again, Cal's done a great job with Kentucky. Kentucky's always a factor. They're going to get the best players. People love to either love them or hate them, but when we talk about next year, it starts. You know, everything starts with Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
So they'll be right there again.
What about the factor of the officiating in that particular game? I know that Coach Calipari, he certainly voiced his displeasure with the group. He felt like his guys didn't have a chance with the number of fouls that were called, 19, and. Let's see, and North Carolina with 18 fouls. So what really led to Kentucky's demise in that particular game?
Well, they had a couple of their, these star players we talked about with two fouls in their first half, so having to rest them and sit them. And so they really were, always trailing or behind because you couldn't get into a flow. There was no rhythm for Kentucky because key guys were on the bench. That's what he's talking about. So it's never like, and officials always do this, it's not about the overall fouls, it's about when the fouls happen. And that's a key thing, because if they put really good players on the bench, mm-hmm. that affects your team. Kentucky couldn't get into a real groove. But, at the end, they did have opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
You got to put aside what happened in the first half. They had opportunities in the second half, and they clawed back. They tied the game. And then the kid makes a great shot. You've got to be able to give credit. The same way that you could look at North Carolina a year ago when they lost to Villanova. They made a great shot. They tied the game. And you got to give credit for what Villanova did and being able to win. Come down quickly and win the championship. So
mm-hmm.
that's the way I view it.
So true. The voice of Lee Klein, the host of That Bracket Show right here at our network, SB Nation Radio, Saturday mornings, 11 to 1 Central Time. Check him out online. So how do you see this game on Saturday in North Carolina, Oregon? How do you see this playing out?
I think Oregon's road stops here. I think Carolina, who's been lucky to survive. They didn't play well against Arkansas. Arkansas had them on the rope, should have took them down. They played okay against Kentucky, but had some key lapses, almost cost them the game. I think this is the first time that they put it all together. Remember, Joel Berry's been nagged by an ankle injury. That's affected his play. He's really critical for them and on his production. I think this this is the game that they put it together. They wear down Oregon when they, Theo Pinson's a great defender. I think you're going to see him a lot on Tyler Dorsey. That should be an interesting matchup. Dorsey, who's been out of his mind all tournament long.
He has.
Mm-hmm. I think Carolina and what they could do in the front court. Jordan Bell's played fantastic, probably, way above and beyond what anyone expected. That wasn't a Pac-12 coach. now he's going to get tested with the, you know, with the Carolina front line. So I think this is where it ends for Oregon. I think Carolina has too many answers, and we'll see. I mean, Oregon is mentally tough. They're resilient. Dylan Brooks and Dorsey, Bell, but I do think that Carolina has too many weapons and wins this game.
Okay, a great preview of North Carolina, Oregon. But talk to me now. Let's shift gears. Oh, my gosh. You're an amazing, a smart basketball mind. I bet you predicted that South Carolina, it was going to be South Carolina Gonzaga in this year's Final Four. I mean, are you kidding me? What an amazing, a Cinderella story.
It's a lot of fun. And
it is.
You know, Frank Martin, someone who I knew as a high school coach.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Cool.
Here on the center stage, mm-hmm. you know, one of the most incredible people you'd ever meet. Mm. Finally getting his due is something I'm really happy and proud about. He's also the first Latino coach to coach in the Final Four.
Wonderful.
Which is historic in its own right. This South Carolina team is defensively is as good as anyone in the country. This is 1-2 in defensive efficiency, Gonzaga being 1. It's really a war in that regard. But offensively, Sindarius Thornwell has been the guy who's come up with every answer, and he's been able to carry South Carolina. P.J. Dozier, kid who I know really well, he's played well. Additionally, two South Carolina products leading the hometown team. Now, I think Gonzaga, Nigel Williams-Goss, Perkins Williams, besides the front court, I just think, again, too much, too many players, too many answers. Unless South Carolina is able to really turn them over, like, you know, West Virginia had Gonzaga there for a moment. That's how they got to play this game to beat them, to beat Gonzaga. They got to play like West Virginia did, put them in a position to win. I just think that Gonzaga is going to take advantage of South Carolina on the front court. And Nigel Williams-Goss is one of the best guards in the country, and I think they move on. I think we're going to see Gonzaga play North Carolina on Monday night.
How incredible. So talk to me about this. I mean, I'm from the Northwest. What is the perception now? I think about, you know, 30, 35 years ago, the perception of Gonzaga basketball, how far it has come. What is the perception now nationally of this program? I mean, they have reached 19 straight NCAA tournaments.
Well, it's incredible. You know, it shows twofold. One, if you get the right coach at the helm and you get a school to invest and believe in them, anything is possible. So when you look at where Gonzaga's come from, and Monson that started it, but, you know, Mark Few and just this incredible run and the ability to recruit top-tier talent and the investment the school makes on the program. And they're spending over $3 million on the program. It's just, you know, helped invest into the success. And now when we talk about best programs in the country, when we talk about the Kentuckys and the North Carolinas and the Dukes, you got to include Gonzaga there when we talk about on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Gonzaga, UCLA, Arizona, hand in hand.
Our guy, Lee Klein, has been with us. He's the host of That Bracket Show. He has got you completely covered. It's a full court press. You don't want to miss it. Tomorrow morning, 11-1 Central Time, right here at our network, SB Nation Radio, SBNationRadio.com. Final question. Give me a quick hit. I got 15 seconds. Who is going to be your pick to win it all in 2017?
I'll go on North Carolina over Gonzaga.
Okay.
I'll ride the redemption trail. Don't miss That Bracket Show tomorrow. The only team that beat Gonzaga this year,
wow,
BYU, Coach David Rose, he'll be on That Bracket Show.
He knows his stuff. Lee Klein, always a true pleasure, my friend. We'll catch up real soon. Thank you.
Sounds great. Yes.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way in hour number two at SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell back with you at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. As promised, baseball conversation is going to continue as we go around the horn. And our next guest, that's right, for all of you Houston Astro fans, we are going to preview the big season ahead. Always a true pleasure to have Astros beat writer Brian McTaggart back with us at SB Nation. Good evening, Brian.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited about the big season ahead. As you know, the Astros, they're young, they're dangerous. In fact, they're one of the youngest teams in Major League Baseball. And I know they're looking to improve on winning 84 games from last season. You've been there. And how do they look in spring training?
Well, they look pretty good. I mean, they came through it really healthy, which is always the number one goal. And the two big question marks were their top two pitchers, Dallas Keuchel, Lance McCullers. Would they be healthy?
Mm-hmm.
Both came through with flying colors. Both pitched really well. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, when they get the lineup together. You know, in spring training with the World Baseball Classic, they really never had their full lineup together at any point. So, when they finally do that opening night, it'll be interesting to see how that gels. But things went pretty good in the spring, and expectations are high, and they just got to go out and do it now.
Yeah, expectations are very high. Last year, 84-78, third in the AL West. You just mentioned the pitching, talking about Dallas Keuchel. Is that going to be the key in order to turn the corner this year and crank it up, kick it up another notch?
Oh, yeah, that's going to be the key. I mean, their starting pitching wasn't very good last year. Keuchel battled injury all year, ended up, you know, getting shut down the last month.
Mm-hmm.
McCullers started and ended the year on the DL. And so, you know, they were giving starts to guys that, you know, they probably had no business starting games, and they're trying to contend, and, you know, they got off to a poor start, and it was just a lot of things went wrong. But, it, you know, like anybody else, it starts and ends with pitching. And for the Astros, it's going to come down to the health of the top two guys, and even Charlie Morton, who, you know, is coming off a hamstring injury as well, another guy who looked really great in the spring, and an intriguing arm at the back of the bullpen is Joe Musgrove. So, you know, you can look at the pitching and say, wow, you know, they have some holes here. But if things fall in place like they hope, it has a chance to be good enough, especially considering the lineup they have.
Astros beat writer Brian McTaggart is back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. Brian, you've got some great stuff on your Twitter feed. Share with our listeners your handle. Where can they check you out?
Yeah, it's just my name, at Brian McTaggart, BrianMcTaggart, and try to link all the stories and do commentary during games. So if you're an Astros fan, certainly I think a worthy follow anyway.
Absolutely, you definitely are. And you were just talking about, you know, the high expectations for the Houston Astros this season. Who do you think is going to be the biggest threat?
Well, I mean, I think I'd keep an eye on Alex Bregman, who, you know, came up last year midseason as a rookie and had a struggle at the beginning, went 1-for-32, and then really took off the last couple of months. I think a full season of Alex Bregman, he could be poised to do some really big things, especially now hitting in that number two spot in the lineup.
Okay.
Behind George Springer, ahead of Jose Altuve. But the lineup has a lot of threats. If you go up and down, they're going to have guys like Brian McCann and Evan Gattis and Yuli Gurriel hitting mm-hmm. in the bottom third of the lineup. But that's a really deep lineup. But their top five is as good as anybody, and Bregman's going to be right in the middle of it.
You know, it was a couple weeks ago, I had Reed Ryan was on my show, and we talked about last year, that slow start in the month of April, 7-17 in the month of April. What do you think is going to be the key in order for them to get off to a strong and a fast start?
Well, they're going to have to take advantage of winnable games. There were a lot of close games last year that they let slip away. I mean, A.J. Hinch has said repeatedly that, you know, they were playing well enough to lose. And so they're going to have to win the tight games. They're going to have to pitch well, obviously. You know, I think they're going to be able to hit. But Keuchel and McCullers need to come out, establish the tone next week, first couple of starts. And I think if they can get through April in pretty good shape, I think they can settle in because, you know, from like May 24th, I think, through September, they had the best record in baseball, but
right.
They dug themselves such a hole, they just could not claw their way back, and then the injuries mounted. But, you know, every team wants to get off to a good start, but, you know, considering how much you put the Astros behind the eight ball last year, I think it's something they're really focused on.
You know, you've mentioned several times Brian Dallas Keuchel and Lance McCullers, but we got to shine the spotlight. Let's talk about the core of this team, really, in many ways. These young guys, Jose Altuve, the batting champ, an MVP contender, and the 2015 Rookie of the Year in Carlos Correa. I mean, I cannot believe it, Brian. He just turned 21 last year, and that's got to get you fired up about this team. What kind of improvement and progress have they shown already coming into spring training and with the season ahead?
Well, Correa, you know, he went away and played at the World Baseball Classic for a few weeks and was tremendous for Puerto Rico. And, you know, he's going to have to strike out less, I think, tighten things up defensively a little bit. So you're going to have to monitor that as the season goes on. Altuve, who knows what's next? I mean,
yeah.
Just when you think he can't get any better, he does. Last year he added this power stroke where he hit 24 homers and flirted with 100 RBI. So he's a complete player, loves to run. He's got the power now. So George Springer's another guy who needs to take another step forward, maybe strike out a little less, put the ball in play more. But all those guys have all-star potential, including Bregman. So it's when you're writing out that lineup, and that's the first four names, that's pretty daunting.
Okay, we only have time for one more question, Brian. Who's going to be that breakout player for the Astros in 2017?
Breakout player, look for Joe Musgrove, the starting pitcher, the rookie that came up last year.
Okay.
Made 11 appearances, 10 starts. Guy that throws strikes, the guy that competes. He's a strong guy, built for 200 innings. He has the look of a major league pitcher to me. I think a full season of Joe Musgrove, I think he's a guy who could win double-digit games, gets the strikeouts here and there, but just very pinpoint control, and I think he could be poised for a breakout year in the number four spot in the rotation.
That, of course, is Brian McTaggart, the Astros beat writer. A very special thank you to all of our amazing guests and lineup. What a fun 2 hours right here at SB Nation Radio. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest and the best, the Big E Sports Show. Join us at Twitter, @ERadioSports.